to, and we don't want to at all.
Innovation's exciting.
It's exciting, and it improves the quality of our lives. And it's important to underscore that the median worker is under a lot of terrible strain these days. In most material ways, they live better than the Rockefellers did.
Right. Okay, I know that argument, but you know, that's really, that just doesn't cut it when you don't have a job.
Yep.
You can't pay your heating bill.
You don't have health care.
You don't have health insurance.
You can't put your kids through, you have no idea how you're,
you know, I just think that doesn't cut it.
Well, we lay out a couple of directions for addressing this problem. We don't think we're at the stage yet where you just, you know, stop working and tell the machines to take care of us. I mean, that's not where we are yet at this point.
What about the distribution stage we're at? I mean, we've all seen the numbers.
So the solution that we want to point towards is the one that addresses Voltaire's three needs, which is making sure that we find ways that more and more people are productive. And there's two broad things that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
One is reskill and upskill the labor force to help develop and nurture those sets of skills that we can do. Part of it is college, but part of it's also vocational skills. There are right now, the American labor force is sadly lacking in a lot of types of skills that would lead to jobs. We hear over and over from people at Caterpillar and elsewhere that they would like to hire people for some of those factories, and they don't have the right skills.
So don't throw up our hands too quickly and say we're done, because there's a lot to be done.
There's a lot to be done. We can invest more in education. We have 19 points in our book that lay out some specific things we can do improve that sense. The other side is you know what we call crowdsourcing, but this idea that Joseph Schumpeter, the economist, called creative destruction.
Sure.
The economy is constantly reinventing itself. And it's not reinventing itself because a couple of MIT professors lay out a blueprint and say, this is what you have to do.
No, but you are telling us that the pace and scale of the reinvention right
now
is
bigger
than we've ever
been. And so we need more people in helping us with this reinvention. And those people are typically called entrepreneurs. And it's not just entrepreneurs, you know, the billionaires in Silicon Valley. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of smaller entrepreneurs working at eBay, developing apps, doing all sorts of small businesses and medium-sized businesses and some big businesses.
Which is all great, but the pace of that change doesn't keep up with the challenge of employment. You got social entrepreneurs. They're occupying here and occupying there in their way. Frederica in Waterloo, Iowa. Frederica, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, gentlemen. I love this conversation. And, gentlemen, I cannot wait to buy your book, as I will use it in my college courses. I've been
$2.99 on Amazon.
Yeah, digital only.
Digital book, $2.99. There you go. Machine makes it cheap.
I can't wait to get it. I've been teaching this very concept and sentiment for over 10 years to students, met with only the kicking and screaming of, no, it can't happen.
Yep.
But I think we show every day in our actions that it is happening and that we actually do value machines, maybe not more than humans, but just as much as humans.
How do we see that? How?
In our consumption and the way we rely on them.
We buy the cheap stuff that machines make.
I mean, we want our smartphones, we want our computers, we want the machines. And I think people would also, I don't know, the fear confuses me. I mean, the machines will ultimately out-speciate the humans, and we haven't yet added artificial intelligence into the conversation, but once that is there, humans have to go at some point. So the extinction doesn't really bother me.
Well, wait a minute, you mean extinction in the workforce? Is that what you mean, Frederica, or you're saying we're a virus on the face of the planet?
Of the human species in general. I mean, at some point we have to go.
I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going there.
That's not one of our recommendations in the book, by the way.
What, are you really ready to just let the machines do their clean thing, what they're going to dress each other up in fashion and we're going to walk off?
Well, the machines are really cool, and I think people like them. And once they become more and more intelligent, we gravitate to them, and it's maybe some human instinct within us. I'm not part of that crowd solution right now, obviously.
Wow. Love the replacement workforce. Love it.
We're hearing from Siri on the phone.
Frederica, thanks for calling. What about it? I mean, there is a way in which we are fascinated. She's onto something here. We love it. At the same time, it may take our job when a machine does an incredible thing. Who buys all those iPhones?
No. The title of the book is Race Against the Machine, but the conclusion of the book is Racing with Machines, Using Machines. And we are, as we said at the outset, digital optimists. This is a rough period of transition we're going through right now with the technology accelerating faster and faster. But ultimately, the machines are working in service of us, working with us to create more value.
You think we're going to have some kind of Shangri-La on the other side of this?
Yeah, pretty much.
For everybody, not just for 1 or 5 or 10%.
Eric and I both do believe that the transition is going to be tough and challenging. It's going to force some very tough societal conversations. Our point is let's start those sooner rather than later.
David in Washington, Pennsylvania. You're on the air, David.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
All right.
And I was listening to NPR this morning. They had an interesting segment there about the virus that ran through the Iranian nuclear power plant.
Stuxnet.
Caused several problems there.
Yeah.
And, you know, along with all this discussion of machines doing everything for us and obviously computers controlling the machines that are doing these things for us, does that create some problems for you guys? This possibility exists.
It's all great to automate until that virus gets turned around on us, and pretty soon this whole machine-operated economy is going nowhere.
So we looked at that when we were writing.
We're going to work in security. We'll be digital security guards. That's our job.
Yeah, keeping the machines away from us. We looked and tried to see if it was realistic that we were heading into a Matrix or a Terminator kind of scenario where the machines become so smart that they rise up against us.
Or they let us down ultimately. They get sick and quit.
They quit.
They get
attacked. We didn't find either of those scenarios really plausible. Gary Kasparov had a great quote about this. He's the guy that
chess master who lost
to Deep Blue, mm-hmm. and he says the computer that beat me was intelligent in exactly the same way that an alarm clock is intelligent. He said, didn't make me feel any better to lose to a $10 million alarm clock, but it's not correct to talk about these as human-like or as intelligent machines. When Eric and I looked around, we saw exactly the same thing. We saw extraordinarily fast, expensive alarm clocks.
But we also know, to our caller's point, they are vulnerable. We're vulnerable to viruses, so are machines, maybe on a more mass scale. One more call, Bethany in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Hi, Bethany. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I was just calling is I'm the wife of a laborer.
Good.
And he works at a quarry.
Okay.
And my husband is required to work every season, rain, winter, summer, I mean, in rain, summer. And
cutting stone.
He works with a crusher. He has to weld.
Yeah.
The bridges that you drive upon, the asphalt that you go on, those are all things that are produced at my husband's quarry.
Okay.
And there's jobs that he has to do where he has to slide into small little spaces and dig things out and fix things.
Yeah, I've worked in a crusher. I know how hard that can be. What do you think about the big picture then, Bethany?
What my biggest concern is that it's not being discussed is the next generation, the younger kids, the 20-year-olds, even the 30-year-olds coming into those different vocations. One, they're not giving the opportunity to get the training. Two, they're not being encouraged to come into those professions.
The things that machines aren't doing, the things that are gritty, the things that take a human hand.
It's difficult work. I'm not lying. My husband can work 12 to 15 hours a day. However, I don't see machines replacing him, but we do see that the people that come into the quarry looking for the jobs are in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s. They're not in their late teens, their 20s,
they know 30s. That kind of work. Bethany, our time is so short, but what about it? I mean, you say, you know, one thing that's a safe bet is cutting lawns. Machines can't do that very well yet. The things that take... I mean, maybe we'll have to really value those superhuman tactile things, but Bethany's saying young Americans don't want to do that. They want to build a machine, be an entrepreneur.
And we have decided to value and to point everyone toward these classic white-collar office jobs. And I'm with Bethany. I think a little more diversity in the kinds of work that we glorify would be a great thing here.
I think it's going to be more in things like the healthcare profession, where there's just an exploding demand for home healthcare aides and people working with the human touch, as you mentioned, in those areas that machines can't do.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of Bethany's husband. I used to work in a crusher, you know, digging the crushed stone away from the gear so it wouldn't all clog up. Now, maybe you can make a machine to do that. I don't know who wants to do that now. That is hard work.
It's still a job.
It's hard work, but automation is important. I mean, we wouldn't want people to go there with teaspoons and create more work. I mean, the idea is to automate and make it as efficient as possible.
On the other hand, to Bethany's point, her husband has a job. He can take pride in it. He makes it all happen. This is really interesting territory you've taken us into, racing against these machines, where we're going to end up, and the big social and economic changes that may have to come alongside all this accelerating innovation to hold the society together, to keep it all working. Eric Brynjolfsson, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Andrew McAfee, thanks for coming in.
Tom, thanks so much.
Both with MIT and the Center for Digital Business at the MIT Sloan School of Management, their new ebook, buy it on Apple, Race Against the Machine.
Amazon,
excuse me.
Apple
one of, you know, one of those machine places. One of those machine places. Thank you so much. Thanks, listeners, for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.